पियर के पास ए आपके पास वीड मिलेगा क्या सर आपके पास वीड है क्या आई रिमेंबर दैट
आई कैन नॉट इवन मैनेज एन ऑनेस्ट लाइक वर्किंग मैसेज टू द ब्रो
अच्छा यार मैं अच्छा
No.
Like, you know what? I think we are better friends now that we fought. Yes.
That's all good.
Yeah.
Okay, are we rolling? Okay, that's on you. On this episode of PG Radio, I bring to you Parveer Sidhu, aka Perry Sidhu, my first roommate in America, my older brother figure, the guy who literally taught me step by step with so much poise and leading with example, bro. Like, main bata nahi sakta. I was so blessed to have him around when I was 21, 22. And I credit him for a major part of who I've become. And so through the means of this conversation, my attempt was to sort of bring to you the many principles, at least make an attempt, ki thoda bahut bhi nikala hai. The many principles I learned from him over the course of like 3 years of living together before he moved back to California. And frankly, I hope it does the same kind of magic. This conversation does the same kind of magic that being with him has done for me. Having said that, there are two things I want to tell you about this conversation. The first one is that any other conversation that I have, anytime I put it on YouTube, the purpose of it is not to tell you to do X, Y, and Z, is to open your mind. Like I say, like I profess, my purpose in producing content is to incite wonder, is to guide you to beauty, not to utility, not to what is right and wrong. Wo bahut boring aur second-hand task hai. Wo aap log khud bhi apne aap kar sakte. Secondly, during the course of this conversation, we touch upon something which is pretty fragile in the socio-economic, socio-political structure of India, which is psychedelics. And having said that, let me also add a disclaimer. I do not encourage the use of psychedelics. I haven't done them myself ever. The only reason why we bring this topic into conversation is because I want to explore the intellectual meat behind the idea. Something we slept on after the 60s war on drugs in America. Right? So, sirf usko us level pe enjoy karo. Kuch samajh mein aaye, kuch seekhne mein aaye, kuch maza aaye, kuch curiosity bane, to jaake aur padho. Uske alawa zyada dimag mat lagana isme. Theek hai? Okay, milte hai aapko. Dusri taraf. Of this. Bye.
Honestly, what I wanted to talk about has a lot to do with how our past has been. And my interest in doing this conversation was particularly that I'm able to communicate how much, sounds so weird, but how much of a like great influence you've been on my life, right? So I had a few things in my mind, stuff that I've picked up along the way, what, 5 years of knowing you now. And I want to sort of touch upon them one by one and see if there is anything else at all that you have to say, that there is, if there is any way at all where people can gather that from you in some way. I don't know if this attempt is going to work, but I thought, why not give it a shot?
Why not?
Right? So tell me about this, okay? We had a lot of conversations historically about, let's call it the art of being a man. Isn't there a book like that, The Superior Way?
Way of the Superior Man?
Way of the Superior Man, right? So like, there was a lot of conversation around masculinity that we've done in the past. Mm-hmm. And since then, and even before, now that I sit amongst enough men who are supposed to be competent, men who are supposed to be strong, well, at least their competence and strength is dictated by how popular they are in the limited sphere of where I work. I've found it is very difficult for two strong men to coexist. Like, it's a very fragile equation, generally.
There's always a tension there.
Right.
Always a tension.
Right.
And it's kind of difficult to, I guess, find harmony, mm-hmm. unless you have something where you guys have confronted something together, right? So if you have some tension, but you've wielded that tension towards a mutual goal, sports, right? Like if you play sports with other alpha men, you build bonds very quickly, and those bonds transcend whatever bullshit problems that you guys might have.
Right.
So your experiences together would really shape that. But if you just put two gorillas in a room, then they're gonna fight.
What do you think? How do these gorillas learn to cooperate? Because so often, our primary instinct is to compete, particularly against somebody who levels up, who matches up.
Uh-huh. Humor.
Yeah?
Humor, for sure.
What do you mean?
Men will take jabs at each other, right? So fundamentally, when men just sit around, we'll joke with whatever fragility that you might have, like something obvious, and we'll watch you and see how you respond, right? And this is all subconscious, like very instinctual. So we're looking at you to see if you're sensitive, if you're fragile in your views, if you actually believe what you're saying, and if you can ping pong it back. And this ping pong that occurs back and forth is really how men bond. You could see it in almost any environment, any hyper masculine environment. People, guys will talk shit. But in that shit talking, it's never to be like, I'm going to demean you as a human being and destroy you. But it's, I want to see what you're made of. I want to see where your fragilities are, where your sensitivities lie, whether or not I can trust you. You know? And dark humor, I think, is a way that maybe it's evolutionarily designed, maybe it's something that we've developed as a culture later on, but I've never not seen it.
I think Because मैं तो भैंचो बचपन से कर रहा हूँ यार ये लोगों से उल्टी सीधी बातें करना yeah. अपने फ्रेंड्स को सामने बिठा के यू नो मेसिंग विद देम एंड शिट एंड सो यू नो द होल पॉइंट अबाउट यू कैन नॉट ट्रूली बी इंक्लूसिव ऑफ सम अदर रेस अनलेस यू हैव क्रैक्ड अ जोक अबाउट इट काइंड ऑफ ज़िज़ेकियन स्टेटमेंट
लाइक दैट ज़िज़ेक
राइट राइट दैट यू हैव टू बी समवॉट डिमीनिंग टू ईच अदर टू एक्चुअली बी ट्रूली कंपैटिबल विद ईच अदर दैट आई एम प्रोबब्ली बुचरिंग व्हाट ही ओरिजिनली सेड बट द पॉइंट इज दैट दैट टू इज अ काइंड ऑफ लाइक सॉफ्ट प्ले Mm-hmm. I don't know if this word soft is accurate because men get very brutal.
Yeah.
But it's soft in the sense at least you're not physically punching each other.
Yeah.
Which is very similar to sports.
Yep.
You know, like even sports is a kind of manifesting your competitive, violent, aggressive instincts that are coded in your biology and then using them, channeling them for something else. So from what you've said, the two things that you said, it would seem like aggression, violence, which is usually where men sort of come at odds with each other. There is a very strong role that that has in the process of them bonding. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I'm sure you've read about that study where it's like in early adolescence, they watch people on playgrounds, right? Just how they interact. And they notice that when women interact and they have a fight with another woman or a girl, they almost never become friends again, right? They become like opposed to each other right off the bat. But if two boys have an argument and then a fight on the playground, almost immediately their friendship gets tighter. And most of those guys end up having long, very fruitful friendships. But I don't know if it's a combination of needing an outlet to channel this aggression that's always there in the first place. But I do think it is a way of kind of gauging whether or not we can depend on you as a person. Mm. Will this person betray me? The more powerful you are, right? Meaning you could do anything. You could do anything to harm another person too, right? If you're attractive, you could steal a girlfriend. If you have a lot of money, then you could do all kinds of things to another man. But I want to know that even if you do have those things, you won't, right? Mm-hmm. And somewhere along the line, you want to know that no matter what happens, I won't do the same thing, right? I won't betray you in some covert way.
You won't compete for the same resources as I, whatever those resources might be. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, in a way. Mm-hmm. It's not like it's as black and white as just resources.
Right.
But really on a very primal level, I want to integrate you into my tribe. That's the beginning of a friendship. Hmm. Right?
Right.
So in order for you to be a member of my tribe, you really have to abide by all the rules. And Indians, it's very clear how you need to treat my parents, how you need to treat my sisters, and what boundaries are set there like made of steel. Right.
Meri behan pe koi hit nahi kar sakta.
Better not, right?
Dekha.
No, but in the same way, right? In front of me, no one can talk about your sister.
Right?
She's your sister, but not a person can say a word to me about that.
Right?
But that is, I guess, like the building blocks, the foundation of which we build friendship upon.
You are like, bro, you know how I would always talk about how my dad and my uncle are friends. Mm-hmm. And they've been friends for like, what, 30, 40 years now. They've practically lived together since 97. So that's 25 years at this point? Yes, 25 years, right? Mm. And I grew up calling my uncle's kids, my brother and my sister, and frankly, like, they're as siblingy as it can get. They are my brother and sister. The funny part was when I learned about the fact that I was not related by blood to them, I was considerably older. And it was so, like, interesting to me how my uncle will call my dad's parents Papa Mummy as well, right? Where my dad will call my uncle's sisters his sister as well. And it's almost this collective taking up of each other's responsibility that sort of ties them together.
Yep.
In our case, I feel like, at least for me, it was moving here was just quite enough, bro. This was a cyclone. I had not anticipated the strength at which living in a culture so distinct from India, even at 21, which is way older than when most kids come here, would hit me. And so a lot of it, for me, the problem we were solving, the mission that, you know, you and your friend need to be on, wielding whatever you said, that came from solving this environment, this very environment. We are at Columbia, by the way. Somebody cannot tell. Tag dal dena bhai. But it came from that, for me, at least. And what I remembered as soon as you said this whole issue was this one time I had a pretty brutal fight with Vinamra. You know Vinamra, you've met Vinamra, you know how he can get. You know how I can get too. And this was at his place. We were probably slightly intoxicated. I don't know what had happened. But we got mad at each other. He got more mad at me because I'm usually the annoyer. Mm-hmm. I'll poke until you're pissed.
Like a walking piece of chaos.
Right. Exactly.
Like carrying heroin around with you all the time.
Bro, marega kya? Marega kya? You would crack a heroin joke. You're from Punjab. Like it fits that entire equation. But He got so mad at me, bro. He flew in with a punch towards me, and I think it landed too, not too hard. Uh-huh. But we got into a fist fight. And 5 minutes after that fist fight, when we were done and we were breathing heavily, it's just like adrenaline pumping through our systems. We're like, you know what? I think we are better friends now that we fought once.
Yeah, that felt good.
Yeah, like, achata, like I wanted to have gotten this out of my way at some point. Now, and I part of the reason why I think me and him have been friends for so long is the fact that we openly fought whenever we had to fight.
Yeah.
Like, there is no mincing of feelings.
These friendships are forged in conflict.
Right.
Right? Like, if I've never seen you have a bad day, if I've never seen you had a disagreement, if we've never had a disagreement, I don't really know you.
But bro, that's exactly it, right? You remember how, like, you can like somebody for having no disagreements with you. Or, yeah, you're so likable, you never disagree with me.
Yeah.
But you won't respect another man for never disagreeing with you.
Ever.
That is almost a necessary condition. Mm-hmm. That two men must, at least at some point, kahin to worldview mein disagreement hoga. Varna main respect kis baat pe karun tere ko? Respect necessarily arrives when I don't agree with you, but I see your point.
Yep.
And I kind of appreciate it.
Yep.
And that's probably the formula for respect. And I think between two men, respect's very important.
Yeah.
You know, so ye bhi, this is also one more thing. I learned that people have inherently the hardest time separating someone's ideas from them when evaluating a close, private, personal context. Even sometimes broader public contexts, people are not able to separate the art and the artist. People are not able to separate the person and the idea.
Yeah, they can't even do it with themselves, right? Like, the definition of being immersed in an ideology is you've integrated that idea with your sense of identity, right? That becomes who you are.
Hmm.
If it's your gender, if it's your political affiliation, if it's your opinion on a given topic, it doesn't matter, right? That is not you.
Hmm.
That's not the core of who you are. These thoughts that keep ruminating in your mind, these complex theories, they have no business being a part of, like, the core of who you are. And the better that you can disassociate from them, the better life you're going to live, but the more objectively you can think.
Hmm.
So if it's so hard for the individual to do it with themselves, like, good luck doing it with other people. You're trapped.
Right.
Right? You just look at people as an amalgamation of categories.
Huh.
Right? And whatever it's a definition of prejudice.
Right.
It's literally just being prejudiced again and again and again.
What do you mean?
Like, if I look at somebody and they're black, right, that should be able to tell me really nothing about them.
Right.
I should not make assumptions about this person.
Hmm.
But if I'm heavily immersed in politics, if I'm constantly watching the news, I'm like, hey, man, it must be really hard out there for you. Or
like, vice versa, or some, like, the other position.
Yeah, whatever it is, right? But if you can't do it with yourself, then good luck doing it with your relationships, man.
Hmm.
And the thing is, like, it really matters, because you're going to have family members that have unacceptable opinions.
All my family members.
At least the good ones, right?
At least the new ones.
And if you have any interesting friends at all, they're going to have some problematic views.
Right,
they're
going
to have
right.
issues.
Right.
But again, you parse through that. Like, your ideas are your ideas.
Hmm.
And even, like, no matter what the idea is, if somebody is a man of conviction, they have principles and they abide by those principles, even if you disagree, you can still respect them for that.
Hmm. So what is your hottest take? Like, what is your most unpopular opinion?
I don't even know where to start, man.
You believe me?
I don't even know.
Do you still believe the Yetis are real?
Yetis? Oh, Yeti.
Yeah.
Oi, kya bol raha tha be tu kal?
Sir, sorry, sir. Main to sir.
Kya bol raha hai?
Sir.
Dhang se bol.
Sir, मैं तो सिर्फ ये बोल रहा था कि अगर आपको भी सीखना है कैसे बात किया जाए अपने दोस्तों से, अपने क्रशेस से, अपने कॉलेज के टीचर्स और अपने स्कूल के टीचर्स और अपने कलीग्स और अपने बोर्डरूम्स और इन सारी सिचुएशंस में किस तरीके से ऐसी बात करी जाए कि आप चार्मिंग हो सकें, आप इंगेजिंग हो सकें, आप अटेंशन होल्ड कर सकें और आप एक डेफिनेट पॉइंट मेक कर सके, तो मेरे पास आपके लिए परफेक्ट सोल्यूशन है. आर्ट ऑफ कॉन्वर्सेशन. गो चेक इट आउट एट artofconversation.in, वेर आई ब्रेक डाउन फ्रॉम हाउ वेन यू आर वॉकिंग इनटू एनी कॉन्वर्सेशन टिल द पॉइंट वेर यू आर वॉकिंग आउट ऑफ एनी कॉन्वर्सेशन. How do you do the brilliant job of retaining a connection? How do you make the other person feel exactly who you are? Because that is the fundamental missing piece from all social skills education. They don't teach you how to leave a mark. They only teach you how to blabber. I will give you my secrets. Only on artofconversation.in, guys. Show up, baby. Show up.
Yeti. Oh, dude, Bigfoot is the most interesting subject out there. It's first of all, I think it's the most modern archetype.
Hmm.
Not modern in the sense of, like, it's happening recently, but people are continually talking about it very recently. It's all over the world. It's existed all throughout human history. And whether or not, like, some part of our monkey mind, our reptilian cortex, is amused by the idea of giant primates in the woods, or people are actually seeing some shit.
Hmm.
And then you listen to people talk about it and these weird things in the wood, feels like something's out there.
Bhai, yahin se shuru hoti hai baat, fir then you are flat earther the next day.
No, I have a hard time.
I mean,
time.
You've gotten to vaccine denial, all of that.
I think the hottest take, the one that annoys me the fuck out of me right now, is everything that happened with COVID. Literally from the beginning to the end.
I have enough complaints, but I don't share all the complaints that you do.
I have I have a lot of frustration, man.
Yeah, how come? Bro, you know, I'm going to flag kar dega YouTube baad mein.
Am I supposed to use keywords now?
No, be like, Dr. Sanjay Gupta, yeah! Ab bol, ab bol.
Now, Pfizer!
Now we'll be fine.
No, from the beginning to the end. Like, in the beginning, nobody had any idea what this thing was, right? We heard talks about something coming out of China that it's going to spread out the world. It's scary. The media was showing people dying in the street, right? Streets filled with people collapsing in China, which was completely a lie. Hmm. But in the beginning, you can give people that
you don't know what is going to happen.
You have no idea, right? So whatever regulations come, you're like, okay, we will fight against this. But at a certain point, they became stronger and stronger, stricter and stricter, and then we just embarked onto stupidity. Hmm. And I'm not saying this like I'm some kind of fucking doctor. I'm not, right? But I've been watching the medical community for at least 10 years now, and there are plenty of problems with medical science today. Plenty of problems. Everything from the FDA to the WHO to the CDC, right? They have major issues, and they're behind 20 years on like very basic things, right? Like what's a proper human diet? How much salt do you need? We've been going to war for salt for centuries. We've been eating 5 to 10 grams of salt. And they're like, now you just need milligrams. It's detrimental to your health, whatever. But anyway, so when the restrictions started to come about, what happened was the most sensitive population started to get impacted first, right? So the elderly and people in elderly homes. And people very close to you and I had to die alone in hospitals because they wouldn't allow anybody to go inside. Hmm. They wouldn't allow anybody to see them, right? These people were cognizant to some degree, and eventually they put a tube down their throat and they never wake up again, right? Hmm. To die alone like that, how dare you? Hmm. As a society, how dare you do that? Hmm. The amount of loved ones that never get closure.
Bro, tereko kya batau bhi, now that you mentioned it. Recently, my dad's oldest cousin passed away. Mm. Complete iatrogenic. Complete mismanagement of the doctors. Mm. I'm not going to name any names because it involves legal stuff. But they gave him an operation he did not need and he never came back from it. He spent the next 1 month in the hospital slowly dying until he did.
Yeah.
And my older brother was crying so hard. He's like, I feel like I failed my father. And imagine, I'm the youngest cousin, I think, on the male side. Maybe there's one more guy who's a little younger than I am. The youngest brother. I've seen all of these guys married before I could even walk. Mm-hmm. And I have the responsibility now to console him. Mm-hmm. Fuck me. He has the responsibility now to stand tall for his family, his mother, whose husband he just let die in his world, the way he sees the world. So it is undeniably true that there is a certain amount of leakage that the medical community and medical science produces.
Not a certain amount, man. It's like, what, the fourth or fifth leading cause of death in the United States? Medical malpractice? Mm-hmm. Medical malpractice, right? And I'm sure in India, it's maybe through the roof. I don't know, but I
don't think there is proper accounting for that kind of stuff.
They probably don't even pay attention to it, right? Just like a part of the
There's too many people
occupation.
To pay attention to stuff.
You know what? Even India, I could say to some degree it's understandable. But if you're in a first world country, especially the United States, there's a standard that you have to meet as a medical practitioner. And everything from how we're teaching doctors and what we're teaching doctors to the role of pharmaceutical companies coming into your med school and then basically teaching you what pills to push, all the way till the end, right? The extreme work hours, you're never going to be able to sit there and start updating yourself on recent studies and so on. Academia is so restrictive that if you do have something, like if you have an opinion on red meat, for example, right, you publish it. I mean, you'll experiment on yourself first. That's typically how it goes in academia. You'll experiment on yourself, you'll start to see benefits, and you're like, wait a minute, I should revisit these presuppositions from before, right, that are 50, 70 years old. Now you're going to start competing with all of the studies that have come before you, right? And like, you have to say all of them are wrong. Hmm. And if your career is on the line here, like say like I'm a nutritionist and I've been advocating for a vegan diet. I have a huge following. To flip and be like, I was totally wrong on everything is an existential crisis for these people. But when you're a doctor, you have a fiduciary duty to do exactly that. Hmm. People look at you like a little god, like a mini god. But in medical schools, they teach you nothing about nutrition. My family, like at least several members of my family have gone through medical school and are doctors. My sister is currently in medical school. What they're learning is at least 30 years behind currently. There's no preventive medicine, right? There's no natural remedies. It's learning the anatomy of the body and then different prescriptions that you can prescribe. Hmm. That's it.
Doctors are to you what motivation men are to me.
I guess both of us, man.
Yeah, no, you know, like the rate at which I shit on people who just talk bland motivation is the rate at which you shit on doctors.
Dude, but the thing is, it's a very noble enterprise. it's a wonderful thing to do for society. Hmm. Right? People are going to look at you for all with all kinds of hope.
But bro, here's what I'll say. Every time you've spoken to me about this, and we've known each other long enough where it's enough times, to somebody who does not have the time to read that literature, to somebody who does not have the time to consider this in its nuance, it does not help. Like, every time you say this to me, I'm speaking of purely in my private mind, what happens to me, I'm like, now I'm more confused. Like, if you truly have a thing against that, I think you should find a way to wherever, here, in your own whatever private time, find a way to phrase it better so people also find, like, what do we do about it?
Yeah. You know what I noticed?
Hmm.
From my own experience too, but just in general, people don't really give a shit until it directly affects them. Right? Until you're suffering, until you're sick,
right.
Until you've gone to many conventional doctors, they've given you whatever recommendation, which is a safe recommendation, and it hasn't worked. You're not getting better. If anything, you might be getting worse, right? Or a loved one, someone that you genuinely care for, your parents, your children, whatever, right? Where all that matters to you is the result. You want to fix it no matter what. Then your walls start to go down, right? So you've tried one doctor, another, and you just end up on this carousel, and eventually you'll start looking into it yourself, right?
Right.
Suffering is a very, very powerful motivator. And the thing is, like, it's so fucking complicated. You're totally right. It's so complicated. There's every single subject, every aspect of health, right? There's misinformation, whatever that word means now, but it's there. You're going to be given the wrong advice all over the place.
But bro, that is also a fault of capitalism, particularly in America, where like doctors can get into contracts with pharma companies. That's a hotbed for corruption, bro. That's a hotbed. Like, if the doctors can receive money for prescribing somebody else a medicine, yeah. I mean, bro, I got to go on a vacation to Aruba next month.
Dude, like the Rockefellers, right? So the reason that we don't practice any natural medicine, homeopathic or herbal, it doesn't matter, is because Rockefeller decided that he could start making pharmaceuticals out of petroleum, right? So he lobbied Congress, and then he started buying medical schools, and then he started petitioning these medical schools to introduce his curriculum, right? So now they say there's zero evidence for Ayurvedic medicine or any of these like natural treatments from Asia and so on. But this is modern science, and that ethos has permeated ever since he did that.
Do you have a link to something like this? Because people are going to want to read that. You said Ayurveda.
Oh, yeah,
I know at least 2,000 people whose dicks are already erect watching this. Bro, anything you do to validate ancient Indian whatever, there is enough people sitting on YouTube being like, yeah, maja aa gaya, now we'll use this. So send me a link so those people can also read up on this Rockefeller story.
And tell them to start with the cow piss. You drink that, you'll be fine, regardless of what it is.
Let me ask you about even just the length and breadth of experiments that we do back in the day. You do mostly. I would eat up whatever you'd give it. You know, whatever you'd make me, there was something always in like...
Dude, I really fucked around with you. Like, bro, I experimented with me for sure, but I gave you some shit sometimes.
I was so happy. I was like, okay, give me, what is going to get me high tonight, bro?
Like, I'm looking at these, I'm like, I don't know what this does, but Brucker will try it.
So, I remember taking hydrogen once.
Uh-huh.
You gave me hydrogen, that pill that would dissolve in water.
Yeah.
I was supposed to clear my mind somehow.
Yeah.
Bro, you were only one step away from Jugnu, because Jugnu would give me that ancient Amazonian medicine in my eye to clear my mind. Pure pain, by the way. There is this medicine.
I do not understand how that's beneficial. No matter what I read about it.
I'll give you let me explain it to people first. So Sananga is this ancient Amazonian eye drop, apparently.
Yeah.
You cannot test its veracity. There is no way to test if it is actually that or just acid. And what you do is you'd pour it in your eyes and it would hurt like shit for 10 minutes or would seem like 10 minutes and your eyes would bleed with water. Like you're continuously having tears come out of your eyes. You can't open them because it burns so much. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards you're like, fuck you, Jugnu. But Jugnu's like, no, your energy is now clean. So this was a cycle that Jugnu and I went through so many times. But
it's like it opens your third eye.
Yeah,
right. It's not for these eyes, it's for this eye.
Oh my gosh, bro. But like, it's similar stuff, less dangerous, less painful. But we tried a lot of shit together.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But I think everyone should self-experiment. I mean, like, you do that pretty instinctually when you're working out, right?
Right.
Like if you're powerlifting, you might transition to bodybuilding. You might go to something more functional, right? You might start working on your mobility. These are all self-experimentation.
Right.
But for us, like, it was interesting just playing with consciousness, right? Your conscious experience of how you go about life.
Right.
And the fact that you can modulate that with like small little atoms of different materials, you know?
Like we did with, I just remembered, Bacopa? Brahmi?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Supposed to work as a nootropic.
Yep.
Right. Yep. Brahmi is supposed to work as a nootropic. And I remember Broke was like, Brahmi is popular enough in India. And so like I'd done it at some point, but I probably never felt it on that textural level. When I tried Bacopa, it really did was just like, zoom, now let's go work. Like now we can write papers. Bro, I remember the FDA saying at one point, you should not drink your mother's milk.
Dude, the whole, first of all, this baby baby formula shortage, have you heard about that?
What is that?
It's absolute dog shit. Well, I don't know why it's happening, okay? There's like thousands of conspiracy theories that I've indulged in that I probably think are true.
King of conspiracy theories right here, ladies and gentlemen, huh?
But it's absolutely terrible for you. It's terrible. A human being should not be eating that. Fully grown adults will get fat, sick, obese, diabetic from just drinking what's in baby formula. But it's all kinds of, it's just corn, maltodextrin, it's whatever wheat that they could find. It's a lot of seed oils and a lot of vegetable oils.
Bro, I have a plan. Tell me what you think about this. You mentioned seed oil. Sorry. I want to sell ghee in America. Bro, it makes so much more sense. Get people off the seed oils. Seed oils clearly villain.
We could get plenty of ghee though. What would be different?
I can't tell you that on camera. Because that's my business idea.
You know what I mean?
Bro, I have some in my fridge, you know. But you could have THC ghee in fucking California right now. People could make their rotis, and by the time they're done eating them, they're a roti.
Dude, do you want to hear a mistake I made?
What did you do?
My family came up to me one day on Christmas, and they're like, hey, we want to do marijuana. So my mom shows up with this huge bag of weed.
Where from?
I don't know, man. I mean, everyone grows it all around us. There's like thousands of people that come to our store. They'll literally either forget baggies or they'll just be like, hey, you guys could probably use this. But anyway, so they wanted to get high. And I was like, okay, no problem, right? So one of our mutual friends makes butter out of it, right? So they get ghee, infuse it with THC, and that shit's way stronger. But anyway, so we made it into an edible, and the problem is that I made the mistake of suggesting pakode.
And what's wrong with that?
They're so small and it's a fucking snack, right? So we put it in a big bowl and it was four of us, right? Three of them were trying it for the first time. And I was like, there's only one rule, okay? Don't bother these people and don't eat any more, right? Whatever I give you, I give you. No matter, even if you don't feel anything for another hour, doesn't matter. Don't go sneaking back and start grabbing. 20 minutes into going inside, they're like secretly going back there, taking more, just leaving, coming back, taking more. They're like, aha, I don't feel it. Dude, my whole family.
Amateurs.
My whole family, they're throwing up on the floor. They can't move. They can't even think. Like, it's like, it was the most intense Christmas
ever. Edibles be like that, bro.
Yeah.
Edibles be like that.
I'm convinced it was good for them in the long term, but they definitely hated
it. Rita, what is your opinion? Was it good for them in the long run? She just had one.
She's having flashbacks.
Bro, but hey, you probably noticed this. Since marijuana got legal in New York, bro, this place has become a complete, like, this is like the summer of love in the 2000s in New York City. You go to Central Park, bro, everybody's getting high. You be in the subway at night, you will find enough people smoking on the train, bro. Not even on the platform, on the train. Everybody's selling. You can get edibles that don't mean shit because they'll say 5 milligrams of THC in this. Bro, the one I gave Lira the other day, it said 5 milligrams on the pack. It's probably close to 50, right?
Like scratch off the zero.
That's what I mean. Shit is going so insane and everybody's high. Right over there in that corner, right outside the arts building, right outside the GS building, where Sushant would smoke cigarettes, where I would smoke cigarettes once. There's only people sitting in a tent smoking weed these days, bro.
Really?
Bro, it's everywhere on campus. Anytime you see, and I don't want to, you were saying you cannot profile a black guy. Anytime you see a bunch of black guys going around campus, like hiding from other people and then like having bags, they're probably going to roll up weed and smoke it.
Oh, yeah. You know, back in the day, you remember when we first got here and how weird people were about weed?
You remember when we asked them about downtown?
Yeah.
Hey, aapke paas weed mile hai kya sir? Aapke paas weed hai kya? I remember that.
We went up to construction workers, like anybody that's like just a group of dudes and they're off to the side. We're like, hey, bro, what's up?
Hey, you carrying
stuff? Or if we smelled it, like when we were walking out somewhere.
Right.
Eventually, you found some cool people. But
bro, you remember our weed dealers?
Yeah, man.
All of them were fucking crazy.
Yeah.
All of them were weird as fuck.
Yeah.
Wavy was weird. Junior was weird. Rel was probably okay.
I don't know if Wavy's alive.
I don't know if Wavy will stay alive. Like, uska statistical probability of staying alive is very little, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, he fucked up big time, bro.
Yeah. But I enjoy how it changed.
He was over once, bro. And Jessica was home and I was home. And we were the only two people home. Jessica was our roommate. And he was high on Xanax, like, bro, beyond. Like, that guy was fucking tripping tits straight up. And Jess, poor Jess, she just locked herself up in the room, texted me from inside, please make this guy go.
I'm like,
just don't worry, I'll get this guy to leave, dude.
Remember when we, the first time we went to his place to go pick up?
Yeah, where he had the whole swollen foot situation.
So his foot was huge.
Yeah.
Huge. And he's talking to us, everything, like it's like he didn't even notice. We're like just looking at his foot, like, hey, bro, what happened down there? He's like, hey, I don't know, man. I think I fell. You think I should go to the doctor or something?
And the fucking foot was like enlarged.
It's like
huge.
This big, purple, and like all kinds of shit. I'm like, that shit's broken, man.
Yeah, that was broken, bro. Every time I met the guy, it made me realize, like, wow.
How good
is
weed?
That's what Harlem's like, bro. That's what Harlem's like. We used to live in Harlem. Like, you'd have to expect some random shit like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really happy that we started with Harlem, though.
Harlem 100%. Harlem everything's up from there.
Yeah. No, I loved it, man. Like, the fact that people were always outside. You could always find old people playing chess.
Right.
Or moving around. Hmm. You know, just doing something interesting. By the way, I don't know if Zevia is listening.
Bro, you should definitely advertise.
Yeah.
We'll make some money off this.
Rakar Ke Parvachan and PG Radio, if it ever comes back, sponsor him. Zevia.
Zevia, sponsor us. We do these episodes called date casts now. We take beautiful people out to dates.
Is this a date cast? Is this a date cast?
I don't know yet. We'll figure it out depending on how the conversation goes, bro. Can't really plan all that much anymore.
You didn't even wine and dine me, man. I brought the Zevias.
Bro, this is you taking me out on a date. You're the older brother here. Mm. You should own up to your responsibilities, bro.
No, you've man. Never you've been getting paychecks
food.
Now.
You've never fed me food except the leftover chipotle that you'd leave in the fridge.
You'd eat that happily.
Bro, okay? You know what? Okay, I have a confession to make. I just remembered. So often when we were living together, Jessica would post on the group, on our WhatsApp group saying, hey, who ate my food? And nobody would ever respond. It was always me, bro.
We know.
We
all know. Avnish and I are looking at each other. We're like, we fucking know it's him,
yeah,
man.
Like, bro, if there was one more person in the equation, I could have still put it on him. I knew it was me, but I was like, there's no way I'm going to admit that. One night I got so hungry, bro. I poured olive oil and salt and I tried to eat olive oil and salt. And then I threw up that night.
Yeah. The weird shit that you put in peanut butter.
What is it?
Like, we would catch you in the middle of the night. You'd have a jar of peanut butter.
Just eating
peanut butter, or like finding random shit that I don't remember. Just like trying to dip it, see if it tastes good.
Yeah, still the same.
You know why? It was because we were doing keto that time. Yeah. And we're like, hey, this is fat, low carbohydrates. Right. It'll be fine. Right.
Exactly why. Right. But bro, that is still the case. I'm still snacking badly. I mean, that's pretty evident, but I'm still snacking badly just like that after every like midnight situation. But now I've figured out what to make. Like, if you freeze blueberries, and they become like very hard, and you add salt on top, it almost tastes like ice cream.
That's how I feel about these Zevias, man.
Bro,
like,
you're
to me, it's
stupid,
a dessert.
Bro. Ugh.
Honey?
Are you still keto?
No.
Carnivore?
I'm basically carnivore.
Oh, you're basically carnivore.
Yeah.
Just meat.
Meat, salt, water, most
You don't
of
think
the
that's
time?
Freudian in any way? Like, still
it can be,
meat.
Man. It can be. You start looking at your mom a little weird. be like, Dad, what the fuck, man?
We also never caught up about Ibogaine properly. But before we even go to Ibogaine, bro, because it's such a... Do people, when you meet them and tell them about Ibogaine, are you okay talking about it?
Yeah.
Ibogaine, ayahuasca, all that BS, okay. Do people ever know what Ibogaine is?
Ibogaine, no, not really. There's only a few people, and typically they're already in that like hippie psychedelic crowd. But
you've done 5-MeO?
Yeah.
You've done DMT?
Yeah.
And you've done Ibogaine?
Yeah.
Which one would you pick again?
Again?
Yeah, if you had to do one more round of one of those.
Dude, DMT is far more mild than any of the other ones.
Really?
Yeah. Like, you just blast off into space and then you come back. You're not sure what happened, but you feel good.
Yeah.
It's short. Iboga is 2 days. It's almost 2 full days.
One dose is 2 days of being high.
Yeah.
Bro, ek bar na isko shuru se introduce kar. Kya hai Iboga? Kya Iboga ka significance? Like, go build it up from the bottom. Nobody's going to understand.
So Iboga is a psychedelic that comes from Africa. It's in the region right by Cambodia, which is interestingly where they say that the cradle of life emerged.
Bro, Cambodia?
Oh,
Cambodia,
no, I'm not sorry, Cambodia. Cameroon.
Cameroon.
Yeah, I get all my...
Ah, right.
But so Cameroon, it's a root, right? So the story goes is that this tribal leader went out one day and he noticed that these... Shrub, I don't know what they're called, but they're
shrubs,
like...
Shrubs, bro.
No, they're like marsupials. They're like these armadillos, kind of.
Achcha. Yeah, so, type ka animal.
Yeah, So they were always looking around for food. They would follow them to see what their food source was, and they kept gravitating towards this root. They would dig up the shrub, and when they would start to eat the root, they'd act really strange afterwards, right? So he plucked it, brought it home, and he's like, let's see. He didn't end up coming back because he was a village leader, something happened, but his wife made dinner for the both of them. She was waiting around, she had decided to eat it. She ate it, and she started tripping out for 2 days, like two full days, right? Like losing her mind. But when she emerged, she had a lot of wisdom and insight to share, right? So people are like, there's something to this. The tribal leader was like, somebody else needs to try it just to verify. I'm not going to do it because you could die, right? Because she had a horrible time. Everyone's like, nobody knew what was wrong with her.
How long ago was this?
This was...
Many hundred years ago?
Probably many hundred years
ago. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they know when it began.
This is a folklore then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, somebody from the village tried it and they're like, I met God. I met our deity. And the wife did it again, and then eventually the tribal leader did it, the other members of the village started to do it, and then it became a rite of passage. So it's very strong. It tastes like shit. It doesn't taste as bad as ayahuasca, which is comforting, but it's something that you should think very carefully about before you do. It's not to be taken mildly at all.
As opposed to ayahuasca, which can be taken mildly?
Hell no. I mean, I don't know. I know a lot of people that took it mildly, and they're okay, I think.
Right. They're still integrating.
but yeah, so it's very different from the other psychedelics. It's more rational. It's more reasonable. It's
so
more,
like, you're not as floozy.
You're not as lost in different dimensions in outer space talking to different entities, but it's extremely practical for your life. It's just extremely harsh.
Like painful?
Physically painful at times, but more so it's the psychological distress that comes.
What happens?
You start to, so in the beginning, the way it's done, it should be done in a ceremonial setting. There's only one place in Costa Rica that I can recommend on the Western Hemisphere, right? If you want to do it in Africa, good luck.
Yeah,
because those stories are fucking crazy, right? But if you want a very mild experience, Costa Rica, you do it at night. You stare into a fire, and there's some kind of synergy that works with Iboga and the fire, but you want to basically dose yourself to a point where you can't tolerate anymore, right? So in tribal communities, they just keep shoving it in your mouth, right? Your whole goal is to look at this fire for about 24 hours. You're just staring at a fire. If you look away a little bit, there's a bunch of people watching you, and they'll just smack you to get your head back in the fire.
For real?
Meanwhile, they're shoving this shit in your mouth the whole time, right? And it's not like it's in a capsule or anything. It's the fucking bark. You got to chew it. It's gooey. But once it starts, I remember when it first came about, I'm like, I don't really feel anything. Everyone started to go inside. Like when you start to feel it, you step away from the fire, you go into the dark. But I was like, I don't really notice anything, right? So I'm like sitting by the fire by myself and I'm like, okay, let me just go inside and see how it goes. Maybe I just need more. And as soon as I lay down and I ask myself, like, do I notice anything? I close my eyes and I'm literally looking at vividly 1,000 eyes that just blink open and start staring at me. And I'm like, yeah, I'm in it. I'm definitely in it. But so there's a spirit of Iboga, similar to how they describe the spirit of ayahuasca, where...
Is it more masculine? Like the ayahuasca?
It's extremely masculine.
So Iboga, the spirit is masculine. Ayahuasca is feminine. Mother ayahuasca, right?
Yeah, that's how they describe it. That's also how the experience goes. But they call it the father psychedelic. And it is a very masculine lesson that you embark upon. But you begin in early childhood and you start to piece through significant memories. They might not seem significant to you just thinking back, but maybe there was like a strong emotional trigger. Maybe it's something that you codified in a weird way. I don't know. The interesting thing is that you can continuously ask questions to Iboga and Iboga will give you answers back.
What do you mean by that?
So they suggest that you write down a list of questions, very simple questions that you might have that are applicable to you. And once you're in the experience, the shaman will come around and he'll kind of give you a nudge. And then you can start to ask yourself those questions. And what's weird and trippy is that you very much hear a voice speaking back to you.
Whose voice is it?
I don't know. It feels like Iboga.
Man, woman?
Definitely a man.
Definitely a man's
Definitely
voice.
Definitely a man.
And because, bro, dekh, matlab main teri baat samajh raha hu. You know how open I am to this kind of an understanding in general. But I have found, just for instance, Clau's been very interested in DMT off late. She's been reading a lot about it. And she'll come to me because she's religious. She'll come to me and she'll say, there is people who see like God, la la la, all that gibberish. Not gibberish, but all that gibberish.
Well, she's Catholic, man. That's a devil. It's the devil.
Bro, ye bhi katwana padega yaar mere ko isme se yaar tu samajh nahi raha pata kitni bazar rakhi
hai. Wait, I can't even say that?
I cannot say that, bro. Oh, fuck you. I take a religion, I'm always like, And then she's like, how dare you say that about my God? And then I'm like, oh my gosh, fuck. But the point is, she will read up about all of this and she'll be like, people saw their gods, this, that. And I'll be like, of course they saw their gods, not someone else's God. Mm-hmm. It's because it's still like an externalization and an extrapolation of their own imagination. It reflects off as if this is an experience you're having independent of your mind, but it's pretty much a product of your own mind. So this voice, do you not think it's a product of your own mind?
Dude, I think about that all the time. Because it seems a little bit too profound for it to be just a like some remnant in your deep psychology that just happened to be emerged or articulated in a manner that's so fucking understandable, precise, predictable, repeatable, applicable. So I don't know, like either your mind is vast, and there's inherent knowledge to it that you might not have countered otherwise, right? Like maybe there's something to this idea of passed on memories, feelings, emotions, experiences that get codified in your DNA and they just happen to reside here and they're just waiting to be unlocked. Or there's some kind of profound substance that occurs in nature that for some reason influences you in a way that makes it feel like you're literally in the presence of something that's far beyond you. And it always feels like it's something that's not you. Ayahuasca very much feels like it's something outside of you. Like an entity walks slowly over to you and you start to interact with it rather than you interacting with yourself.
Ayahuasca is shorter though.
Yeah, ayahuasca is like 8 hours.
But you do it over 7 days.
Yeah, so you do multiple ceremonies and you want ideally some space in between. They'll tell you to change your dose after a while. Fucking man, one time, when I took the first cup, right?
Of ayahuasca,
yeah.
Right.
So like I'm in Peru, in the jungle, fucking tigers and shit everywhere, but you're like, the whole time I'm thinking like, this cannot be how my parents discover that I'm here for this reason and that their son is like fucking dead in a Moloka somewhere.
Right.
But I took the first cup and the first experience was pretty mild. You definitely feel like that DMT kind of grid
that you
start to get, right? So that happens like right away.
Right.
But it was temperate. But then I started to notice that I started to feel like somebody was watching me, right? So it was me, 5 other men that did it, and 2 shamans that they were women. But I felt like something somewhere else was watching me. And it asked me, what are you here for? And I told it something along the lines of, I want to know who I am and what I'm meant for. Something along that. And it just said in the most clear voice, in order to be who you must be, you must die. Tomorrow you will die. And then it just disappeared. So then the rest of the night went on, I fell asleep. The whole time I'm thinking like, you know, my mind's making up shit, blah, blah, blah. The second ceremony, the next day, right? I had the memory, but I'm like, no, I was just tripping, that's all. So I took the first cup and everyone else took the first cup and we all kind of made a pact. It's just a bunch of dudes, but they're like, we'll offer you another cup. We only suggest you take it if you think you're really ready for it. So all of us agreed that if the opportunity comes, we'll take it. Dude, I look around when they offered the cup, I look around and everyone is miserable. They're purging. They're just like on the floor somewhere. They're like crawling. They're really struggling through it.
They were convulsing.
Yeah.
Right.
So I felt like I was fine. So I walk up there, I take another cup, I sit back down, and literally within 5 minutes, the next 10 hours, I've felt the most pain I've ever felt in my entire life.
Physical pain.
It felt like every bone and muscle was being shredded in my body. It felt like everything was just snapping and contorting. Later on, I theorized that it had something to do with my nervous system and maybe a rewiring of that. But it was excruciating. So I don't know. I don't know if this is like, you know, like I'm making it up in my mind and, you know, I'm like manifesting it myself, right? Or if there's like something else that's occurring.
Well, it is not to say that stuff that your mind makes up is not real, right? The experience is still so profound.
Mm-hmm.
People come back very different. We've seen so many people go. No, I've seen you go through it so many times, bro, because you were doing ketamine for depression at some point. And like, I could see you come back after those treatments and be a very different person, particularly after that. So psychedelics are not... definitely not trivial. They could be anything and anything at all, everything at all, but they're not trivial. And just the fact that your mind creates it does not have to mean that they're not as real and as impactful as experiences that might be initiated by another agent, right? So I get that. And then how's 5-MeO different from 5-MeO is 5-MeO DMT, also a variant of DMT.
Yeah.
Toad poison. Yeah, dude, fuck that shit. Toad poison, huh?
It's,
Like 5-MeO is a smaller trip.
They say it's more powerful because it occurs and you're just like slingshotted and you blast off somewhere.
Hmm.
It's very difficult to remember the experience because it's a lot at one time, but you do emerge from it feeling better, you know, you feel happier, maybe joy. I would say the difference is that my favorite quote surrounding psychedelics is beware unearned knowledge.
Mm.
If you just feel good after doing something and you haven't done any work to arrive at that place, then
it's not a magic pill.
It's definitely not a magic pill. It's something to take with extreme caution. But when you're struggling through it, when you see the individual pieces, like all psychedelics really are like an A to Q kind of equation, right? Whether you're meditating for 30 years or you take 5 grams of mushroom once, the effect is described as very similar. However, with psychedelics, especially the quicker ones, I would say be far more cautious because you're going to be a different person almost guaranteed before you took it and after.
Yeah.
You're not going to be the same.
Right.
And sometimes the consequences of that are too much for people to handle.
Right.
They really have a hard time.
Particularly when you're young, the range of experimentation that you can have in whatever field you are engaged in at that point can be pretty large.
Yeah.
And that has results that has not beyond just the stories that come out of it, that has consequences pretty much in your psyche, in your cognition, in the way you work, in the way you operate, in your personality, sometimes even your soul, that are profound and life-changing.
Yeah.
And there is lessons that you make out of the mistakes that you might make in this process
yeah.
that are, again, profound and life-changing.
It's also getting to know yourself. Right. Like even rather than seeing it as an experiment, see it as you're trying to better understand yourself continuously.
Right.
And when you introduce substances, it doesn't even have to be substances. Right. You should, one, value your body. We take our body for granted. We take our mind for granted. Like they're just going to keep operating this way, especially when you're young. You think you can get away with literally anything. And the older that you get, I'm 28 now and I feel like weird saying this, but like I definitely notice a difference between how my body could handle things at 22 versus today. And that'll occur. Like the benefit of being in an Indian family is that your grandparents are around and you watch them towards the end of your life. And sometimes your grandparents can have a very dark time towards the end. No matter how beautiful they lived their life up until, one, people really just remember the end, and the end is what sticks with you. But also you want it to, that transition to whatever happens afterwards should be graceful, beautiful, right? It should represent how you lived.
Mm.
If you take your body for granted today, you're going to arrive at a place where your loved ones are going to be looking at you and they're going to feel really, really bad watching you go through what you might go through. And what that looks like is cancer, surgeries, amputations, right? Like even diabetes alone is so brutal at the end of your life. So if you value these things early on, which you should, you might be able to do something about that. And hopefully your loved ones will have a...
I also think that should fit if you ever write a code for masculinity, which I definitely suggest you do. I think that fits perfectly in there because this is one of those pieces that people leave so amiss is the physical health aspect. So much of the conversation that we do is usually, at least I do and the people in my field do, are mental health based. It's not enough to support the foundation of your mental health, which is your physical being. But you know what? That made me remember about people, this, that, what you were saying. And I'd probably put it in a very caricatured way because it's accurate. But, bro, for as long as I've known you, there is always somebody you are responsible for that is in bad shape. Do you have somebody right now that you're responsible for?
Oh, plenty.
Right.
Plenty.
So what is this fucking... How does that come to happen with you where you are... Like, let me phrase it in a more probably judicious way. What is this responsibility taking? Where does it fit in your life? The fact that you take responsibility for... always more people than yourself. And I was one of those people. And where does that fit into the structure of your life? Why is that important to you? How is it that you always end up there? Do you think it's your own violation a little bit? Or do you think that's just circumstantial ki meri life is ali Bollywood movie hai, sab aas paas lut pit rahe hain. Like, why is that such a thing, theme with you?
I think, one, I was exposed to death pretty early on in my life. Of people that were very close to me. And I am very grateful to my dad. My dad would, I always forget that we're in New York.
Yaar, mere ko ek wo bhi diyo, GVR. Koi bhi de do bhai, dono mein se.
There's a bunch of them in there.
Yeah, yeah. I'll just give one more GVR. Yeah, we're back. Go on.
So this exposure to death early on, but mainly, my dad never allowed me to turn away from it. He never really shielded me, like I guess most parents might. He always reminded me that you must go to the funeral. You must be there. And not just for the person, and like even if it's, you know, they're not there, it's still maybe the highest honor that you can pay them, your final respects. So experiencing that pretty early, watching how people die young, and then I'm Punjabi, right? So most Punjabi people really do wear their heart on their sleeve, and they make their families extremely large. My dad used to get mad at me. He's like, how many siblings do you have? And I'm like, I have two sisters. And he'd get so pissed. He's like, how dare you? Did I fail in raising you? And I'm like sitting there confused as shit. But what he meant to say was that there's a community in Reading, right, that I grew up with, a bunch of Indian people. Some of them are Gujarati, Hindu, or Punjabi Sikh. And he's like, it doesn't matter, right? Like, these people are a part of your family. You need to integrate them into your life. And there are many, many people that I consider dear, extremely dear to me. My issue was that I probably took it too far, right? There's a responsibility.
Have you turned around since?
I think so.
Okay. I don't know about it. Huh?
But there is, yeah, you can definitely take it way too far. One, the only way people actually change is if you afford them the opportunity to do so, right? So when they're suffering, if you take their suffering away, you're really doing them a disservice. That might have been their chance to transcend, and you might have just robbed them of that. That realization really kind of took me aback. But at the same time, like, man, like, when you really care about people around you and you know that the path that they're walking on and what that path might look like, then you really want to help. And sometimes they don't want to help themselves. And that's a really ugly place to be. And the wrong thing to do is to just, like, keep hitting the gas anyway. But my rationale at the time was, if I don't care, then who will?
Right.
Like, this person, I love this person. They don't care about themselves. No one around them cares about them. Do I leave them alone in the world?
I had the truest privilege of all time growing up was the privilege to be selfish. Because I didn't have to worry about my family. My family was so well kept and taken care of, right? People were mostly older than I was, so they were the ones taking care of me. I could have moments, hours and days, where I could just think about myself. I don't mean selfish in the sense people understand. In the sense, like, where what I have to do has only got to do with me.
Yeah.
Right? First, yeah. And then maybe, right? So I would think about it a lot. And I think it is only once I became able enough to hold more than myself in a room. I became able enough where what I said had actual impact on people around me, beyond just my immediate friend group, that I realized that so much of the purpose in life, which is a conversation we've had since day one, right? So much of the purpose in life has everything to do with becoming so competent you can extend yourself beyond yourself and take care of more than yourself. Mm-hmm. Whatever that might mean, whatever the methods might be, because I agree to the point that you cannot take away somebody's suffering, and it's best you don't. That's a lesson that's earned by them, if you want to use the Hindu framework, in their karmic structure, right? This is them trying to learn. This is God trying to give them an opportunity to learn what to do and what not to do, right?
Yeah.
But beyond that, the other thing I think, which is of very important feature in this whole equation, is what I learned from you about your relationship with pain. You might think otherwise of it now, but what I learned from you, and this is a particular instance, I remember we were speaking in your room, which was later occupied by Jugnu. Jugnu was still around. So this is 2018, sometime before you'd left. And I don't know what had happened, but I was telling you guys about something that had gotten me unhappy. And you'd said something about, don't be like the puppy who has his tail between his legs. That if there is pain, stand up to it, man up to it, look at it straight in the eye and be like, fuck this shit, we'll get it done. Mm-hmm. Something to that effect. But you'd only said the puppy wala analogy. And I went into my room that night, and bro, I felt like my vision was shaking. Like the world was moving, because I never thought of that. It is still so clear in my head how I felt that day. That was my psychological reality being rearranged by one sentence. And I think that, but you got very right, for whatever reason that you did get right, is that us men, bro, I think about that a lot. We very often do not have the privilege of turning away from pain. Mm-hmm. If you try to do that, you end up in this loop of escapism. And by men, I don't necessarily mean men. It's anybody who's willing to take the response. Women can have very masculine traits, right? So if you're trying to foster your masculine, there is a relationship with pain which is quite antithetical to your instinct. Mm-hmm. It's not to run away from it. It's not to go after pleasure in any way.
Yeah.
So look it dead in the eye and be like, I will solve you.
Yeah.
I will put an end to this. I will find a way to, like, the antidote to chaos, Peterson's words, right? And that changes a lot about how you look at the world from that point on.
Yeah. your inner self will start to reveal itself to you in suffering, in pain.
What does that mean?
Well, a lot of the initiation ceremonies of tribal communities with their young men involves a significant amount of pain. And I don't know what the neurochemistry of that is, but you start to piece away these remnants of your identity that probably don't belong to you, right? So especially when you're really young, most of who you are was just handed to you, right? You're trying to emulate your father, you're trying to gain the respect of your brother, you want your friends to like you in this way, you want girls to like you, so you want to be whatever. And all of these things are really just a facade, but there's something in here, right? That's the core of who you are. Whether or not you ever find that or discover it, I hope you do. I hope everyone does. But to build a relationship with that, it only really occurs through struggle, through strife, through pain and suffering, and especially with men, because men will build a very strong ego, right? Like, I'm sure you know people that just walk around thinking that they're their shit all the time.
Oh, I have one name for you guys that are going, fuck this dude. Perfect plug, baby. Perfect plug. Yeah, bring that in.
But in order to decimate that ego, in order to destroy all these things that don't serve you, you really got to beat the shit out of yourself. And sometimes most of the time, that looks like physical difficulty. People do this instinctually. They'll work out, right? That's painful. It's not pleasant. It's not like it's enjoyable. It's only enjoyable after the endorphins are flooding your brain, right? Cold showers, difficult conversations, right? Like contending with your father. If you have an abusive parent, for example, and having to deal with that, all of these things, they start to forge you like iron. But making pain your friend is probably one of the best things that especially young people can do, because it's never going to disappear.
Bro, people don't give this advice often enough anymore since the landscape has changed towards softening men, which has its own importance too. Like, cry, bro, it's okay. Like, sometimes you can cry, that's no big deal. But, and like, what that has sort of eclipsed is the fact that in so many ways, the ultimate point of responsibility of so much pain that happens around you ends up being you when you are taking charge, when you are the man, let's just say, right? Like, if shit is going bad with work somehow, everybody in my team will turn and look at me. Mm-hmm. And I can't turn and look at anyone, bro.
Yeah.
Right? So often recently, I've been having this conversation with a lot of women in my life, friends, my girlfriend. And every time I tell them about this aspect where, as a man, you are robbed of certain privileges. You're the ultimate point of responsibility in so many ways. Yep. You have to lift up so many people at so many points. Mm-hmm. And then there is other things I cannot place right now. But whenever I tell them that, they're like, that's so interesting. We never thought of masculinity like that.
It's for sure the case, man. But the thing is, it's an honor.
Right.
It's an honor for people to look at you for strength, to people to look at you for hope. And that privilege can only be afforded if you deserve it, right? If you've earned that. And to be the person that did earn that is so gratifying. It's so good for your own self-esteem, right?
Right.
I can handle myself.
And you.
I'm going to take responsibility for all the people that I love.
Right.
Right? As many as I can. And just being a father alone, right? You're the ultimate point of contact for your entire family.
Can you imagine, bro? Like, you know what that does to you? Now I get so much of the way why my father is the way he is. Mm-hmm. For 40 years, you've been the ultimate point of responsibility for so many things. How will that not harden you and make you believe that you can make ultimate decisions on stuff? Right? That's my perspective. I think, why are you making decisions? Why aren't you consulting me? La, la, la. Mm-hmm. Bro, he had no options when I was 7.
Yeah.
He was the only guy who's making the decisions, right?
He might still look at you and see that 7-year-old.
100%, right? Bro.
For your father to look at you as a peer, you have to earn that as well. I love men like that. Men that were built and forged in honor societies, you can look at them and you instantly recognize that there's a respect that they just deserve.
Hmm.
They deserve. And you could see it by the proof of how their family operates, right?
But bro, Pata, I think you're mistaking. That's just like a very small minority of men raised in honor culture can actually do the honor honorably. A lot of it goes down to shit very, very quickly. Because the insecurity of man, which is another aspect of masculinity, I don't know if you'll be able to explore it today, is so much greater than an insecurity of a woman.
Yeah.
A man's hiding so much more insecurity. And so in honor societies, insecure men make worse monsters than non-honor societies.
Oh, for sure. For sure. But the thing is, an absolute absence of honor in your society is also a great way to build catastrophe.
I think honor gets introduced as soon as you introduce the idea that you are responsible for more than just yourself. I think the American mind misses this a lot. The American mind hasn't understood that the purpose of becoming the best version of yourself, like Socrates or Nietzsche might say, is to then be able to extend yourself beyond yourself and capture other people in your area of concern, right? And because that step is missing, what ends up being is masculinity ends up representing itself as a masturbatory exercise. Yeah. It's about me. Yeah. It's really not so much about you as you becoming a vessel.
It almost has nothing to do with you in the end.
Right.
Right. It has everything to do with you in the beginning.
Right.
Figure out your own shit.
Right.
But my dad used to tell me this all the time. He's like, your life doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the people that love you.
Hmm.
Right. That's who you really need to hold yourself responsible towards.
Hmm.
And the thing is, like, at the end of the day, there's just misery and death. Right? Everyone's just going to die.
Right.
And if you can modulate the quality of the little experience that they have, you might as well gear it towards something that's beautiful, that's beneficial, that's something that they can rest at, on their last days and say, my life was good.
Yeah.
It was enough.
Bro, I mean, haan yaar, log na usko scale nahi karte dhang se. There are so many, like, how do I even say this? Every time I'm in an opportunity where there is any help I can do to someone, whatever little my friends, they're not feeling well. My first thought recently has been, what if they were to die very soon?
Yeah.
And then you're like, bro, kuch chahiye? Like, is there something I can do immediately, even if you're not very friendly with them? And probably part of it comes from the fact that I've moved so often at this point in my life from here and there. I've made and lost so many friends, like this guy or this guy. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow, you for that matter. Tomorrow we might not be talking for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. I end up in Somalian pirate ship somehow.
Yeah.
And there is no way to talk to you or vice versa.
Well, you get a very small opportunity, right? Like right now we're interacting. I'm going to go back to California and then there's going to be a chasm.
Right.
Right. And then you get another opportunity, maybe.
Right.
But you really never know what happens. And the thing is, it's like, I really love this from Meditations with Marcus Aurelius. Live as though you were to die today.
Hmm.
Right. Take all of your actions today as if this was your last. And then it starts to frame all of your priorities pretty clearly.
Right.
Right.
When death becomes the starting point, the way you look at the world changes quite a lot.
Yeah. Right. Well, I think memento mori is such a good exercise for people continuously. It's difficult if you've never encountered death.
Right.
Most of the time people will, like, even the way we conduct funerals now, it used to be in your home, it used to be in the open, the whole community would come, right? But now it's like in a funeral home, the casket's kind of away.
Bhai, wo tumhare hota, hamare aise nahi hota.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Hamare yahan to bro, like I'm so glad for the fact that the tradition around death is not corrupted as much as it could have been.
Yeah.
It's like, capitalism's not touched that. People like that to be tradition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it becomes hollow without it, right? Like
right.
If you don't have that, you learn a lot about somebody at their death.
Mm.
And if you could watch your own death, you learn a lot about yourself too. Like three days ago, I had a friend that I went to high school with and she died
very... Too many people in your life die, bro. No joke.
No, many people die.
I know,
die.
Bro.
That's just,
most of them are in your life.
Maybe it's me, man.
Yeah, I don't know, dude. Every time I talk to you, I'm going to hear a sentence that says, this person I knew once is now no longer.
Well, statistically, the more people you encounter, someone's going to go some weird way. But anyway, it happened. And then you immediately start reflecting upon all of your time with them and what they must have thought about their tomorrow, all of their hopes and ambitions and dreams. And then it just abruptly ends.
I even think about the final helplessness that comes with realizing you're going to die. Like, bro, hum realize nahi karte, we offload so much of the responsibility of things are going to be all right on so many people around us, right? People who we can trust and so on. Like men, like older people, whatever they remember, your mom.
Yeah.
And then when you're dying and nobody can do jack.
Yeah.
That's painful, dude.
Yeah. Or even the chasm that's going to be left with your absence.
Mm.
If you have a daughter and you leave her early on, oh my God. Oh my God.
Even a son, bro, for that matter.
I mean, it'll impact them both immensely, maybe forever.
Right.
But like a daughter is just like a very clear example of how much her life can just change forever. Change forever. All because of your absence alone. And even if you're alive, right, and you're just a shitty father, and you're not around for your kids, right? The ramifications of that are immense. But it is also a good way to at least recognize that your life has value, no matter how shit you are.
Tune Bojack Horseman dekha hai?
Bojack?
Bojack Horseman.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen... Bojack's mom is the most interesting character for me. How the fuck are you so selfish? It's a caricatured American, like whatever.
Yeah.
But like, after you've had a kid, how are you so selfish? How can you be so selfish after you've had a kid? Mm-hmm. That baffles me about the American mind. I don't get it. Indian parents can be shitty in their own way, horrible in their own way, abusive in their own way.
Yeah.
But like that disconnect never happens where if I'm sober, because drunk is another state altogether, my responsibility is you.
Mm-hmm.
Americans, sometimes some Americans, or for that matter, some people largely of this society will often have kids and be like, the kid became an obstacle to my dreams.
Yeah, that does
happen.
You know
what I mean?
That does happen.
And it's like, kya ho jata us dream ka yaar? What would have happened once you had that dream down?
Yeah. It's an inherent problem with individualism.
Right.
You just remain an individual for way too long.
Yeah, right.
And all that shit that really matters, it starts to die off. Right, but your kids are the first ones that experience those consequences.
Right.
Or even like the conversations around, like, I don't think people are honest about abortions in general.
Hmm.
It is extremely traumatizing to go through an abortion, right? It'll stick with you forever. Hmm. It's not something that you joyously recommend to somebody.
Right. I just have a friend who recovered from a proper PTSD episode from her abortion.
Yeah.
And she's as pro-abortion as it gets.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know where it started to go off the rails. The thing is like having community, having religion, having like a traditional structure is beautiful because it at least allows the basics of society to progress, right? You want to stay in the home, you want to raise good kids, and you want those good kids to be contributing members of society.
No, you're solid on that. Abortion ki position, bro, not just abortion, I found, and this helped because I was in India briefly and I could look at America from a distance because I'd spent 3 years here. American political positions are so entrenched in the capitalist way of discourse that very quickly all substance begins to lose. Like neither of the sides is honest. Mm-hmm. Because there is only two sides, first of all. It becomes very binary. I'll take the opposite position of you and I'll go more and more extreme, consolidating more and more towards my voter base than actually ever meeting the substance in its core.
Yeah.
So the argument that the kid's body has autonomy, as far as pro-lifers say, and the argument that the kid's body, like this is only my body, my rights, they're both caricatures of a more reasonable position, which is that the kid gets autonomy at some point and we've got to be reasonable in anticipating where.
Yeah.
But up until then, it truly is a collection of cells and must be treated like such. People need to be given a chance to repent or like go over their mistakes. You cannot, it's going to be a you cannot force somebody to have a kid. You know what I mean? And maybe that's not the large position. But my point is there is a more reasonable way to frame it that gets lost in the American discourse so quickly.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the discourse is facilitated through media bites, through Twitter bites, and people have very little retention at this point.
Yeah. To just be able to hold a complex view.
Right. It's just becoming far and more.
It's so absurd that people can't even hold the opposite side just remotely in their mind.
Right.
One, if you don't understand the opposing view, then you really have no business having an opinion. The opinion will generate, right? But you should not give any credence to that opinion.
Say that properly. You said something extremely important. Unless you can articulate your opponent's position better than them, you have no right to have your position. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because that's such a good litmus test, bro. People forget that so often, huh?
Well, you don't understand the breadth of the subject at all, right? If you only understand one side of it, there's probably a chasm that you're missing, that you're completely overlooking, right?
Right.
And the goal at the end of the day, your goal, express goal, should be to find what's true. Right?
Right.
To find what value matters or what principle you want to uphold. First principles thinking. The only way to do that is if you understand the breath. And you don't even have to understand it perfectly, right? But at least do your best.
Bas, bro, yehi to baat hai. Hum log pehle ideas ki baat kar rahe the is conversation mein. That's the thing that's missing. It's not just that, oh, I can separate the idea from the person. Once you can separate the idea from the person, you can flirt with all ideas.
Yeah.
You can go down the risk of taking and thinking about all ideas that might fall in your purview to the T.
It's such an interesting way of going about life.
Right.
Right. If you get stuck in your own world, in your own head, it's a miserable existence.
It's a one-track existence.
Yeah. And it's probably close to the definition of what anxiety and depression would be. Right. The characteristics or at least like the symptoms that manifest. You're trapped in your head. You're stuck here. But if you can't first separate your own ideas from yourself, then good luck with all of this. And I think that should be emphasized in people. I love the term philosopher. I wish people would, one, call themselves philosophers, and then think philosophically, or at least broach philosophical subjects in school. Because what that does is you're just inserting yourself in a conversation that's began through the beginning of time, or at least written record, and it's the most fascinating minds out there, but also it's the most important subjects. And they all disagree with each other. And you never know where you're going to land.
Right. And a lot of it, like, you know, when you read about a lot of these philosophers, you'll say this so-and-so person was being raised in so-and-so context and therefore their thoughts reflect that underlying value. Like, there is no one truth is pretty evident as far as philosophy is concerned, but even the contest has so many flavors that are dictated by so many historical and sociological factors that all of that, I think philosophy in America should not be taught as philosophy. That's a gibberish tag for it. It should be taught as history of thought. It's just a far better way of teaching what they actually teach, which is just let's go through Kant, let's go through like whatever, Fichte and all those guys, as opposed to calling that philosophy, because philosophy should be more freeform. And I think about that a lot, right?
Dude, but they also they'll bring up the context of the person. Like they'll call Immanuel Kant a racist for whatever his views were.
Right.
But
Heidegger is the best example to use there. Heidegger is a Nazi. Yeah. Everybody knows he was a Nazi, right?
But they will pick and choose the subjects that they broach on their philosophical record, right? So like whatever you've written, Plato is a great example. Plato has fantastic things to read about, right? It details all of Socrates' life, from the Apology to the Republic. Like, they're wonderful. Plato also genuinely believed that his ancestors knew of the existence of Atlantis, and it was his responsibility to allow that to continue, or to at least like progress that knowledge, right? Like, people are extremely complicated. Or like,
but Plato also had a story about reincarnation very similar to the Indian model of reincarnation. That never gets spoken about as much, right?
Well, you get stuck on like Platonic forms, or like what his ideal governance system might be.
Precisely.
And all of these things are just like a way to kill philosophy, or at least kill the beauty of philosophy.
Truly.
Because these people are weird. They're weird. They're crazy, right? Some of them have been virgins their entire life. Some of them have syphilis, right?
Yeah,
and they're writing all this gangster
brain,
shit.
Bro.
Yeah. Right. Like, Nietzsche was going insane.
Right.
But everything...
Kierkegaard was depressed.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. And that complexity also gives you a lot of freedom too.
Right.
Right? Like, we all know we're weird. We're strange. We're extremely complex and we're dark. Huh. But, you know, there's still something of value to be produced. Mm. You could be lighter on yourself.
Do you think Kanye West is a modern day philosopher? Kanye West, baby, ladies and gentlemen.
Only history will know.
Bro, yo, I listen to his talk with Rogan very often, because I don't know if he's smart, but he's definitely original. The way he thinks, definitely original.
Dude, his music is dope. I don't know about the new stuff. I'm going to be honest. I don't know about the new stuff.
Which one? The Jesus stuff?
Some of it was cool.
The Jesus stuff I liked.
But I really like his old stuff. I love Graduate. He even made a song. I miss the old Kanye. Stick with the flow,
Kanye.
Kanye.
Yeah.
I hate the new Kanye.
I've gotten very interested in rap, bro. I've gotten very interested in the form. Like, you can say so many things with rap that you just cannot say with a microphone. People don't understand the flaw of doing what I do. Or people, why would people understand? It's my problem. But when you pick up the mic to say something sincere, you cannot say so much of what might be confrontational, adversarial, or even like picks apart on people, or reflective rather. Because if you're so serious, then it must be coming from somewhere, like the whole syphilis argument with Nietzsche. If you're saying something so seriously, where is it coming from?
Yeah.
With rap, you can get away with saying so much shit because it's performance. Mm-hmm. It's no longer, what is the word, didactic or discursive? What is the word? Discursive.
Probably. Yeah. I don't know what discursive
is. It's not like speech there, right? You're performing. You can be a character and then get along to say so many of the other stuff. But Kanye is a joke. Like, the fact that Kanye West is a modern philosopher, I use as a joke. My attempt is to cheapen the meaning behind the word philosopher. I think, well, academia has a bunch of problems, but the way they foreclose and they fortified the idea of philosophy to rest only in these buildings and rooms full of Aristotle's
books. The literal ivory tower on the top of that building over there.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but that makes it so inaccessible. My favorite philosophy class I've ever taken was at a community college. It's where I fell in love with philosophy.
My favorite philosophy class was evolutionary psychology. First principles way of thinking about human behavior.
It's fascinating.
Yep.
But at least with Kanye, one of my favorite Tupac quotes is, hold rappers accountable for what they say.
Mm.
Right? There's, regardless of what you think about it, music is still a very powerful medium. And you can really nudge society in a positive direction or a negative direction. That doesn't mean that you have to take responsibility for everything and you got to be like cookie cutter with what you're...
Plus, you're a rapper, yaar, apni matlab tum wahi ganje banje ki baat karo aur niklo.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure. But also, like, you're a guide, right? Like, hip-hop in the old days was a rebellion.
Right.
Right? It was in rebellion to whatever the status quo was. It was like a release for all of your agitation, right? Your problems at home, whatever, your beef with... doesn't matter.
Right.
But if you diluted in the way that it has now, where it has no substance, I think you're taking away from it. Kanye, I think, is like on the latter end of that, where I think what he's saying, like, he's really trying to get something out of here to there that at least significant to him.
Right.
But I don't relate to nobody in the music industry nowadays.
Kendrick?
Bro. Kendrick, yeah.
Hey, you listen to the new album?
Kendrick, no.
Bro, there is a song called Father Time. I told her about it. Mm-hmm. I was like, make Parveer listen to it. It's about daddy issues, the whole song.
Make Parveer listen to it.
Bro, no, because I'm being serious here, right? Bro, like, come on. Strong fathers, daddy issues, you cannot fight it, right? And the song's entirely about that. He's talking about the good and bad of daddy issues.
Yeah.
He says at one point, like, fuck daddy issues. They made me competitive on one end. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, men, leave grown women alone. Like, don't make them carry the weight of your daddy issues. So, like, he's giving a very... He says this one line, he's like, I don't know what he says this in context. So like, I hope your blessing is neutral to your toddler.
Interesting.
Not positive.
Yeah.
Not negative. Neutral to your toddler.
Yeah.
And that makes you, because there is no way you can avoid daddy or mommy issues in life, bro.
Yeah.
Like Osho says, right? Family is the fundamental unit of corruption. That's where corruption begins in the mm-hmm. mind. You don't just inherit the wealth and the values. You also inherit the traumas and the complexities from your family.
People have always been alluding to this tension within your family.
Right.
Whether it's Freud and sexual tension or like something more reasonable.
Right.
I think like how Jordan Peterson describes it, you have to contend with your father, but that's a higher representation of the father.
Right. Right. And by the archetype of the father.
Yeah. And by that, he just means judge, right? Am I good enough? Am I actually of service? Do I matter? Is my existence meaningless? Am I just wasting air? Or has the fact that I've existed on earth contributed to something good, something beyond me?
Mm.
And the first example that you have of that is your actual dad.
Right.
Right?
Right.
He's going to be constantly pushing you, constantly nudging you. You're never going to understand him early on.
Right.
But the appreciation that you have for your father definitely comes on in later life. Like, my dad is not inherently rational.
Yay! Now we're talking about daddy issues. Ki. Yay! Bring it on.
No, he's a Punjabi guy. He farmed his whole life. He's from a village in India, right? He grew up extremely poor, and he left all of that with nothing. Found a way to come to America with no money in his pocket, and then built everything from scratch, right?
Right.
It takes a particular type of person to do that in the first place, but. The life experience will also scar you in many ways too.
Right.
So for me as a kid to like just hold the weight of all of that, I'm not going to understand it.
Mm.
Right. But he's going to constantly be telling me what would push me towards what at least he thinks is good.
Mm.
Right. Which is good for me.
Right.
And no reasonable father is ever going to be like, I'm going to teach my kid, I'm going to fuck up my kid.
Right. Right.
Like intentionally. They're always trying to work towards your betterment.
Right.
And if anything, they'll put their life on the line for you.
Yeah.
They'll happily die
right.
for you.
Regardless of the daddy issues.
Regardless of the daddy issues. Have you ever wondered like what kind of daddy issues you're going to give your kid?
So many times.
You're going to fuck up your kid.
Bro, ab to mere ko, I think, main bahut private baat bata raha hu, mere ko lagta hai mere ko daddy fever hai, full power.
Uh-huh.
Like I think about kids very actively now. Which is not to say ki mere ko kal bachche karne, which is to say that when I think of a father, I no longer think of my father.
Mm-hmm.
I think of me being a father very soon. Yeah. So, like I have had this unique insight into understanding all the faults that I lay at my father's doorstep as a kid, now, in a position where like 5, 7, 8, 10 years down the line, I'll have kids of my own. I think about it all the time and I'm going to mess up my kids real bad with the kind of person I am.
Yeah.
So, you know, the reformation has begun.
Dude, Alira asked me about this all the time. Everyone asks me, my family makes jokes about it, but I'm going to make that kid a fucking gangster. I don't give a
bro,
shit
that's
if
what you
me.
Say and then you leave them with trauma.
I don't give a shit if
right, Alira?
Me. Let them have the trauma. It could be beneficial too.
He's going to give your kids there. Trauma.
But at seven,
hell yeah, girl, bring it in.
At
yeah.
7 years old, they're not going to see their mother again. They're going to be off into the woods and they're going to learn to fend for themselves.
Bro, ye na, I think Alira, jaise wo nahi hota spider insaan ban jate hain, aise mutant type.
Yeah.
Ye mutant ban jayegi aur fir tere bachche
uthake. Have you ever seen her walk like that?
Right, right. I have a picture of her like
the grudge.
Like the grudge.
Yeah.
This is exactly who this person is. Show yourself to the camera, Alira. Right. This is exactly the person from that movie. And she will run to the forest to pick up your kids and
bring
them
back. She's the prettiest grudge though. Little demonic, but beautiful. Yeah, fatherhood is a trip, man.
Yeah.
It's wild to think about.
See, I'm making your boyfriend think about the right things.
Thank you.
Yeah, you should always be thankful
don't
to me.
Don't thank him. I don't understand any of you. All of you guys watching this, subscribing, messaging me about Prakhar.
Bro, you have to
I
do,
don't get it, man.
My audience said that they want me to make you do a handstand on a tree or some shit. And say from there as your handstand.
How the fuck can you do a handstand on a tree?
Bro, no, you will find
a
wall.
Oh, against a tree.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. My point is, we'll find a wall, but you have to do a handstand. And when you're inverted, you have to say, please like, subscribe, and share this video as like an exit point to this video.
Get the fuck out of here.
Bolio like, share, subscribe. Yahan pe laake bulwa.
What do I have to say?
Just like, share, subscribe.
Listen, you beta males out there, like, share, and subscribe to the biggest idiot that I know.
Bro, aaja wapas. Main to tere mazay le raha tha. Kisi ne kuch nahi bola tha. Chat. Isse kehte hain aadmi ke mazay lena jo hero banne ki koshish karta. Aaja, aaja.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Theek hai, bro. We can call this a wrap. This was good. This was awesome. Fuck yeah. Let's go.